if there's, I want to be clear that if there's an evacuation notice, that we will immediately implement our evacuation procedure. We're not going to wait for any kind of a mandatory. It's going to be as soon as we get a notice that we would move forward with our evacuation. Evacuation. So there's some questions that came up at the last meeting about, you know, let's have some more information about how long is that going to take and what is that going to look like. Our primary evacuation route is down South Kidder Creek Road. And we do have a secondary route, which would go out the Taylor Divide, connecting to Patterson Creek Road. There is a portion of that road that is not completed yet, and it will be the priority once the permit is approved to complete that road. We've been working with engineers as well as with CAL FIRE and our neighbors that property goes over. We have a legal easement for that secondary route, and that will be priority once we move forward with the permit. You can see here, this is a copy of our evacuation map. The blue line shows our campers and where they are walking. And then the red line shows the evacuation route down South Kidder Creek Road or out Taylor Divide Road. Evacuation, so once we say go, the immediate things that are going to happen is that we're going to sound the alarm for emergency. The Scott Valley Berean Church in town is going to be called immediately. We also have communication with a church here in Wairika if the Aetna location was compromised at all. We have another location over here in Wairika where we could evacuate to as well. The support staff, so the counselors, are going to be with their campers, and they're going to be, you know, walking to the safety zone area. At that same time, the support staff are going to go immediately to the office where they will get vehicle and driving assignments. We are committed to a two-hour evacuation time or less that is current, as well as with the proposal for the expansion. So within 30 minutes, all campers will assemble in the program area. They'll get a head count, and they will walk to the temporary refuge area. Programs with vehicles will depart immediately. So if you're not familiar with Kidder Creek, we run multiple small programs. Typically, we have five programs going at one time. We have our wilderness camp, mountain bike camp, high adventure camp, ranch camp, and guest groups. Guest groups are on site with their own vehicles. They will leave immediately. Mountain bike camp and wilderness camp have vehicles assigned to their program. They will get in their vehicles and they will leave immediately. That leaves ranch camp and timberline camp. Those are our two bigger camps, you know, which would be about 140 campers. If you add staff to that, we're looking at about 165 in those two programs. You can see here, this is, you know, I'm gonna lay out a plan for how we're gonna get everybody out of there in 2 hours. It takes 13 minutes to drive to the Scott Valley Berean Church to come back. It's 26 minutes round trip, and it's 8.7 miles. Our current vehicles, this is now the implementation. What vehicles are we using to get everybody out of there? These are our current vans, vehicles that we have on site for program. You can see there that we have capacity to get 121 people out of there in each evacuation that we would perform. So right now we have 216 campers. If everything was maxed out with campers and staff, we would have approximately 216 people on site. You know, full camps and then the staff to support those campers. So evacuation one at 30 minutes, we've assembled, we've walked to the temporary refuge area at 30 minutes, we're getting in the vehicles and we are leaving, if not already on the road, the mountain bike and the wilderness campers, as I mentioned. So they would go to the church, they would drop off the campers, they would come back, they would pick up. At 1 hour, we would have 242 people evacuated. So within, right now, currently, within 1 hour, we would have all of our campers evacuated. So that gives us an hour. If something goes wrong, a tree falls in the road because of a wind event, that gives us an hour to still meet our two-hour time mark to get everybody out of there. So within 2 hours, all campers and staff have been safely evacuated and to the designated on-site location. So with the proposed evacuation plan for max occupancy, obviously that's a lot more people on site. What is that going to look like? So with the expansion of our programs, we'll have more vehicles. We bumped that up by 30. And then we have our groups that are on site. Those are our group adventures. If there's a family camp that's there, those people are leaving. That's 220 of the proposed occupancy would be people that are kind of fall within that category, as well as staff and volunteers, guests who are on site. So within the first evacuation, the 30-minute mark, a big portion of our people on site are leaving. They would drive to the church, they would come back, we would get another 150. We also, when the time is appropriate, we would have a contract in place for buses. So we left an hour and a half for those buses to kind of get to camp to be part of evacuation three. So even without using evacuation four, we have capacity to get 870 people off site within our 2 hour mark. So even with our max occupancy plan, you can see that we have thought out and have good science for the timing of that. Why did we choose 2 hours? Well, that's kind of the worst case scenario, is that we would have 2 hours. Just want to make it clear that our job is to get people out. We're not going to be hanging around camp. Once we establish that we are getting out, we put this plan into place, and we are moving. In the event that it's needed, because, you know, these simulations only will go so far. What if something happens? What if the worst happens and you can't get people out? Well, that's where the safety zone. Again, we don't ever plan to use it, but do we have a safety zone that is of ample size for sheltering in place if needed? Our evacuation plan and fire behavior simulations have shown that under normal fire and most catastrophic fire conditions, we would have plenty of time to evacuate our campers. In the event of a catastrophic fire where we cannot get out, Cal Fire has recommended that we shelter in place. So they know where we are and they know where to send the resources. This is a little bit about the science of what makes a good safety zone. We've had some good discussion. It used to be that the safe distance was times four. Now that is, the standard has become, since 2017, the articles that we found, is that that is times eight, and that you take the wind and slope factor into account when you create your safety zone. So our average tree height around our safety zone is approximately 80 feet. So with a wind slope factor of 1, so 80 times 8, we need 640 feet of space for our safety zone. You can see the map is attached in your appendix there. You can see the sizes of our... with a slope wind factor of 2, then we would need 1,280 feet, which our safety zone and surrounded shaded fuel break around our safety zone is still of ample size for our safety zone. You can see there was an article in there where it talks about reducing the fuels around your shaded or your safety zone by using shaded fuel breaks. It additionally increases the effectiveness of your safety zone. And here you can see with our map here, our big pasture, that's as you're coming into the camp. We have 1,235 feet by 786. You can see that yellow circle there, kind of in that shaded fuel break area, the arena. There is no vegetation in there. Right above there is the dry lot where we keep our horses. There's very little vegetation and it's down to the dirt. We maintain that area around the cabins. We've talked about how we maintain down to the dirt around the cabin areas. The loop that's up above the soccer field and the orchard, that's the RV park, very large trees in there, very little vegetation. We maintain that area by raking each year, keeping that area free of any fuels. So you can see also the new pond, which would additionally add to our safety zone as well. That's an approximate sizing of what that would be there. But with that new pond, the soccer field, the orchard, big pasture, you can see that we have over 1,240 feet or 1,280 feet in either direction when the shaded fuel break is taken into account on the south side there. I just want to talk briefly about the benefits to the communities as part of our fire, wildland safeguard prevention. The secondary access road is available to neighbors on Patterson Creek Road, Valley Pines area, as well as on South Kidder Creek Road and the loop if needed. There's an additional water source for firefighting with the new pond as well as with the existing pond. There is a staging area for firefighters in an already existing safety zone and use of camper cabins if those were needed, to have Cal Fire or others kind of stage up at Kidder Creek Camp. And we have a good and proactive forest management through regular maintenance, implementation of our CFIP program on Kidder Creek Camp, creating additional fire breaks and fuels reductions. So the conclusion, when taking into account simulations of fire behavior, including the worst case scenarios, CAL FIRE suppression, which was not included or factored in the simulations, fuel break areas surrounding camp and ongoing forest management, our robust evacuation plan, and our safety zone space, if needed in a worst case scenario, the Kidder Creek Wildland Fire Emergency Plan exceeds the requirements of the PRC 4290. CAL FIRE has reviewed and provided feedback and agreed that we have an adequate emergency plan.
Commissioner Veal has a question for you.
Yes.
Do you have liability insurance in the case of death due to forest fire?
Yes, we do.
And have they reviewed your plan?
Yes, they have.
And they're happy?
Yes.
Any questions for him before I take the next step?
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to move following our protocol. Typically, we would have other county departments speak at this time. Do we have any comments from other county departments?
No.
Okay. Since they are here, I'm going to put CAL FIRE on the spot. Thank you for coming today. I appreciate that. At this time, as a public agency, I would invite you to the podium, and the floor is yours, sir.
My name is Greg Roth. I'm the Assistant Chief CAL FIRE Siskiyou Unit, and I'm here to answer any questions that you may have related to this project from the CAL FIRE's perspective and laws regarding 4290.
Okay, since you're here for questions, I'm going to put you on the spot with an open-ended question first. Can you share with us your relationship and discussions with KCOC over the course of the development of the plan?
Yes. So since the normal process for these plans are that CAL FIRE receives them or reviews, make recommendations or requirements perspective to the Public Resources Code of 4290. So when this plan came to CAL FIRE, we made those recommendations. I believe, I'm not sure the year that the initial proposal was. And then personally, as a CAL FIRE employee, I was both the pre-fire engineer in fire prevention and also the fire prevention battalion chief. And I personally worked with Kidder Creek Camp in advising them of what they would need to meet as far as the secondary access road, needed to be deeded access, whether or not the roadways would meet the requirements of width. And then also as the Scott Valley Battalion Chief, I also helped them with questions related to their evacuation plans, things like that. So over the course of since 2016 maybe, we have been involved with advising them on this project.
Thank you. Before I ask my questions of CAL FIRE.
This is kind of a generic question, but how wide a fire break do you need to prevent a fire from traveling, say, 8 miles an hour or whatever, up to 30 miles?
So it's relative to conditions, right? Everything, fuels conditions, weather conditions as far as wind, all have factors in what will actually stop a fire. So there's different recommendations. I'll probably refer to Jeremy Ravenscroft, who is our vegetation management.
It just seems like there isn't one wide enough ever that
there isn't. I mean, on fires in the past, we've had fuel breaks that are 10 dozer blades wide with no fuel on them, and fires still can cross them.
Or jump by five.
Sure. The important part of fuel breaks is that they are implemented in the right place, and that it slows the fire, hopefully, so that two things. One, fire protection resources can go get the fire and actually extinguish it, or it also creates a safer place for our firefighters to engage the fire as well, because there's reduced fuels there.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Commissioner Mello?
Done right now. Thank you for your comment, sir.
Yes, sir.
Commissioner Hart?
The weed fire.
Yes, sir.
Mill fire. What, an hour? In that building, the Lake Shasta development?
Yeah.
And a 45 mile an hour plus wind?
Sure.
That's my big concern of that right there.
Yeah.
And the fire's not going to start up in the camp there. It's going to be downslope and go up through there.
Yeah.
Is there adequate evacuation out of that canyon if a situation like that arises?
I think those situations are extreme, right? We talk about the campfire, we talk about the mill fire and weed. It's hard to prepare for those, and I don't know that that anyone could ever be prepared enough for that. And that is why we make all these recommendations, so that people can be prepared as possible with evacuation plans, you know, exercising your plans so that when catastrophic wildfires happen, that you are as prepared as you can be for those. So to say that it couldn't happen, I couldn't tell you that. But I would say that with the plans that we've worked with them on, that they are the most prepared that they could be, and we have helped them be the most prepared that they could be with them. So there's always additional factors that could be implemented with anything. But to say that a fire like that could never happen in Scott Valley, in Yreka, wherever it may be, that would be wrong of me to tell you that.
Well, you've got the evacuation zone in that meadow. Yet I look what went across Billy Lloyd's meadow there and burn up Eric's house.
Sure.
I mean, I just drew that meadow and I'm going, nothing was going to stop that.
Right. So wind is probably one of the most driving factors for catastrophic wildland fires in Siskiyou County, especially at Southwind. Most of our largest fires have come from that, and that fire specifically was wind-driven, had a very strong south wind, just like the fire previous in Weed. You could see in the field that you're talking specifically about, the areas that were green, stayed green or somewhat green, the areas that the cows had eaten down and were brown, burned. And that's because that wind driving the fire and blowing embers, it just embeds in those dry pockets of fuels and catches on fire. And that's what also causes structure loss, is ember cast into there, and then you have the wind on an ember that lands either on a rooftop or the gutter into a piece of siding, and then the wind just blows it, and just like you're blowing on a fire in your fireplace to get it going, things catch on fire.
I drove right into the middle of it.
Yeah.
Going down 97, I just lit up and exploded. And that's. Yeah. I have some grave reservations about people being trapped up in that situation.
And I think that the mitigating factors of that is that there is a safe refuge area there that they've identified. And so the worst case scenario is that safety zones are designed for people under conditions that they can safely be there without, you know, a fire shelter or suppression measures or whatever, that hopefully that they can ride it out in that. And that's why those distances are established. And then secondly would be the reason why 4290 requires two exits and for access egress is so that if one is cut off, you have a second option to be able to escape.
So I drove with the folks from Kittercreek. I drove over Taylor Divide Road.
Mm-hmm.
And Industrial Timber, which would be, I guess it's to the south of the property, has constructed quite a fire line through there. And I guess there's a plan to goes all the way from Callahan all the way along that, that north side.
Yeah.
And it's my understanding that Industrial Timber tried to work with Kittercreek to do work on their property. Is that now, where is that at?
I'll refer to our forester, Jeremy Ravenscroft, for that question. He could probably answer it more specifically than I could.
Jeremy Ravenscroft of the Vegetation Forester at the Siskiyou Unit here in my region. So regarding your question with the fuel break work in the area of Kittercreek, it was my understanding that initially Kittercreek was part of a larger project, which included some of that front range foothill area work where the current fuel management is ongoing from Kittercreek area towards Callahan, part of a multi-phase project. Kittercreek, my understanding, was excluded because of some discrepancies in the objectives of the project and the desires of the camp to maintain the aesthetic value of the camp itself. The camp does have their own plans to proceed with fuels work. They, like Andy said, they do have ongoing fuels management projects in the camp focused along roadways, access areas, around the structures. And with the proposed future fuel break work, Andy and myself and Tim have discussed the future option of doing a similar type project, the fuel break management that's ongoing currently to the south towards the Etna area. Be similar fuel modifications, but more catered to the camp's desires for the aesthetic goals that they have. And in my opinion, as a forester, fuels management person, it's absolutely a doable plan that we've discussed, at least in the early stages.
So in your 4290 regulation, how many projects we've looked at, you folks come back with recommendations of 2,500 gallon storage tank full of water, firefighting vehicles can then access run-out fires. I didn't see any of that here.
Okay, I'll refer to Chief Roth for the 4290.
Okay. I'll bring up Chief Dietz as well, because I've been out of it for quite a while. And Chief Dietz is the Fire Prevention Bureau Chief currently and oversees current recommendations for 4290. So I'll let him refer to that.
Good morning, Keith Dietz with the Fire Prevention Bureau here in Siskiyou Unit, CAL FIRE.
So, back to what I just asked about 2,500 gallon storage tanks full of water that firefighting vehicles can then access, have an extra supply of water. How come I don't see any of that in here?
So 4290 has gone through several different modifications over the years. The version, if I recall this project correctly, the initial permits were processed in 2016.
Uh-huh.
And so they would apply to the 4290 regulations that were applicable in 2016. I would have to go back and double check that provision. 4290 has gone through multiple different iterations. So without having the 2016 version in front of me to tell you what is applicable at the time of that permit application, can't give you a specific answer on that exactly, but you would have to look at the 2016 version. A lot of what is addressed in 4290 is the structures and the setbacks from vegetation.
So it has nothing to do with available water supply.
So,
yeah, I understand we have a pond and we're going to create another new pond, but I'm going back. I've been on the planning commission for a long time, and before you said 216 when this application came in, we had all kinds of projects come along and required having that extra supply tank full of water.
So one of the factors that's looked at with that requirement is the availability of water tenders in relation to, I believe it's 8 or 10 miles to the project location. Scott, 5 miles. So Scott Valley Fire Protection District, along with Aetna, have multiple, probably one of the most amount of water tenders for a fire department in Siskiyou County. And so by having those, that fire equipment, water tender specifically, it negates the requirement to have the water source, a water tank on site. And that's been the practice in the past.
And so that's for structures.
Correct.
Not for wildland fire.
Correct.
The reason I'm asking all these questions, because there was a project here a year and a half ago on the east side of an Alder Creek. Okay. It was similar in a great big gathering of people on an old Jeep road going back into a Bucks Canyon where the project was down in nothing but bug kill, manzanita, and the antelope fire did burn right down into it. So I'm trying to maybe mix apples and oranges together here about the requirements were there as to what's being required here. We're there, you're 15 miles back off the main road. We're here, you got a paved road in and out of there. Where that project was turned down by the Planning Commission, but then reversed by the Board of Supervisors because of mitigation conditions. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around.
Do you remember if there was requirements of a water tank there?
No, I did not participate in that because I own property right next to it.
There were requirements for water tender to be on site in that one, I believe, too.
Yes, that was part of the deal that we sent to the Board of Supervisors.
Correct.
And I don't know if that remained in that thing, because I know it upset me that they did what they did, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
I'm just trying to be firm, fair, and consistent with one project to the next, because to me that set us a whole different standard for how I look at this. Because here, again, we got a great big gathering of people, and to me, I saw what happened in the weed fire and how fast that went. And some people lost their lives. A whole lot of property damage happened. I don't want to see that happen here. Not on my watch.
But understood, and I think I'm familiar with the project you're referencing, and we were requested by the Planning Commission for a recommendation. If we were to, if they were to move forward and grant that use permit for that facility, what would we, as the fire department, recommend putting in place? That is completely different than the 4290 requirement.
Okay.
So we were asked for a recommendation from the public safety side,
right,
and they implemented those recommendations. And that we also involved the State Fire Marshal's Office in those decisions, and all the cooperators. So you're using two different things, right? A recommendation as a protection agency and the lawful public resource code 4290 regulations, which pertain to structures.
Okay, so you folks have a recommendation, council. Under CEQA, we as a planning commission cannot put down more conditions, this is a question, put down more conditions that are more stringent because of the limitations of 4290 regulations or their recommendations?
You can put down conditions as part of the use permit, or you can add perhaps, this complicated, but additional or stronger mitigation measures in your findings. You actually have two things you could adjust. There's just the use permit conditions themselves, which are completely outside of CEQA, and then mitigation measures if you feel something needs to be better addressed in the CEQA document itself.
So you're telling me we have latitude to make those conditions and mitigations even stronger than what code sets.
Yes, You do, so long as there's a basis for it and you have a reasonable concern for safety and that those measures will address that. So we're not totally talking off in space, and I'm sure we aren't. But yes.
So does that apply just to health and safety? And does that then apply to other issues besides fire, i.e. roads, the whole Marianne? Because I thought our hands were pretty much tied to state regulation.
Well,
and we couldn't go beyond that, and we could not go below that.
You cannot go below what's required by state regulations. You believe there's something particularly pressing that requires a more stringent standard, a special case, then you can be tighter than the regulations.
I would also add that probably the difference with the Syrah project that I believe you're referring to in this project is that I don't believe there was permanent structures built on the Syrah project, which that's the requirement and how we calculate how much water is needed for suppression. With that project, without permanent structures, there would be no calculation to make the recommendation of or the of what size tank of water you would need on site there. And I would also say that that project was well outside of any fire protection area that would have the water tenders required to mitigate that, whereas this project does.
Also, I might add, if you have people on site that are not firefighters, assessing the fire as it is can sometimes not be a good thing. They say, well, we can put it out. Well, can you if you're not a professional? And I'm a 20-year veteran firefighter myself. But there are always situations that you have to adjust to. And not being a professional firefighter or being able to read the hazards, sometimes it's not best to have stuff on there that you think might work. And I might not be clear here, but specific about something.
I think what you're saying is having firefighting equipment on site and then having people that aren't trained
exactly there
to do something that may
and not being able to read, you know, and winds, i.e. the mill fire, that was the creating factor there. And man, and there's nothing you can do about it, unfortunately. So, anyway.
Before I start down my list of questions for CAL FIRE, do you have others?
No, not CAL FIRE, but I do have Cook Creek.
Okay, so my CAL FIRE questions up to this point. Number one, the 4290 regs have been made, that's clear. My question, there was no reference, no details, no suggestions, recommendations regarding 4291. Was there a reason for that? Was that a missight, particularly as it would apply to potential new construction and defensible space as 4291 applies?
I don't believe it was included because it applies to everything and would be included in the annual inspections that we try to do either every year or every other year throughout Siskiyou County. Those are 4291 is a requirement of clearance around structures, and it is applied in the SRA no matter what. If it was built by this date or anything like that negates it, it is for all structures.
Okay, the reason I ask is we've had several projects over the course of the last 3 months that have been including 4291 guidelines as part of the project,
yes,
which we had not been seeing in past years. And then we have the Kidder Creek project, and there's no reference to 4291, which I'm thinking this is a project that it should at least be referenced.
probably just a change in procedure by changing the guard of our employees that do that. And I would assume since it's come up recently is that they've decided that's important to include in there just so that it's specific. But that still does not negate anything previous to meet that standard.
Just beeps.
So, Mr. Farrell, I think I know where you're leading with those permits that are coming through that you're seeing. There are a change in use permits. Am I tracking correctly, sir?
Okay. You would be correct, yes.
Okay. So with that, part of that is they've been requesting 4291 inspections from us. So we've been sending our inspectors out. Right? So the change in use to go from like a vacation rental, I think is where you're alluding to.
Yep. Yep.
That change in use permit. So part of that change in use permit has requested 4291 inspectors, in which I've had our inspectors go out, inspect those properties, and that's why they're bringing that forth to you. And we do that in conjunction with building department, planning department. So understand that while all permits do come through our office, that 4290 is specific to Public Resource Code 4290, and then there's the building code and the fire code that are kind of separate that impact all of those things, fire flows, yes, suppression systems, all of those different factors are addressed in the building and the planning department on that side. Cal Fire stays to the Public Resource Code 4290, which is generally the setback, the road requirement, the posting of addresses, and those types of things.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
That answers the question why it is the way it is.
Yes,
no, that's fine.